Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And as you can see, I'm smiling ear to ear because today's guest is a personal dear friend, a brother in the trenches when we were both superintendents for the same name town. So before we started, right, Marlon was like, yeah, all the email, bad email, that was going to you in Connecticut, not Ohio. But it is great to have Mr. Marlon Stiles here. Marlon, the former proud superintendent of the Middletown City Schools in Ohio. Now he is a partner for the Learner Center Collaborative, has been doing extraordinary work. But today's conversation, right, we're going to have fun because I always have fun with Marlon. But today's conversation, we are going to really be, I like to say, future driven or future focused, really talking about another taboo, but this is from an integrated organizational strategy standpoint, a system standpoint of how we start integrating technology, emergent technologies, generative AI and machine learning that is going to be an inevitable component into within the education sector. But without further ado, my main man, yes, VFB, we got him. Marlon Stiles, Marlon, brother. How are you?
I'm feeling good. I just had 2 days off. I think it's called Saturday and Sunday. It's Monday. Everybody's back to work in my house. The kids are downstairs reading. It's summertime, but I am thrilled. I mean, I am jacked up, been up all morning, ready to have some conversation, talk to your listeners, but I just really appreciate you having me. It's so good to see you. You look great. You look fresh. It's been a joy. I'm not lying. A joy just watching you shine and do your thing, man. Awfully proud of you.
Man, I appreciate it, Marlon. You know the hard work. I mean, the time, the effort, the energy, because we mirror, or you mirror the same vitality with this work. Go hard or go home, right? But now we got to go hard or go home with the podcast because, again, you know, a lot of my viewers, Marlon, they know who you are. They follow your work. So really get in depth with the context of your expertise, right? You have this level. I like to say that you are one of the czars across the country with how to be able to mobilize this transition this mobilization of integrated technology into the instructional model or even the organizational strategy in totality. But we'll get into that. But this is the fun question. This is the Marlon Stiles $1 million question. And it's the first question, Marlon. That's how we do it with VFB. So now, we know about your integrated work with regards to technology within an organizational strategy. It has been tested and emulated across the country. You won various awards, whether it be at the local level, state level, and including national awards that, Marlon, everybody sees that you're winning because you're doing the work. But when education change agents, right, stakeholders, leaders across the country, practitioners at the classroom level that you work with, engage with Marlon Stiles, what equity song comes to mind? What is the equity introduction song for Marlon Stiles? But here's the underpinning question. Why?
Man, you got me wanting to get on this phone right now, scroll up and down a little bit. So if anybody knows me, I'm a big believer that if you turn on an artist and if you are passionate about what they stand for in their body of work, you should be able to listen to every single song for 12 straight hours without skipping a beat, without skipping a song or pressing replay, right? Whatever comes on. For that person, for me, no surprise, Tupac. You ready? Tupac. The problem I have right now is you asked me one song, so I'm going to try to tie this up a little bit, right? Anybody know anything about Pac? Had a lot on his mind. I'm not sure if you saw the recent documentary, but I followed his work, and he really inspired me, right? He spoke from the heart, and it was pure, utter passion. A song that really jumps out to me, no surprise to start out with, is a song Changes, right? And there's a couple lines in that song that really just snatched my attention, right? Some things will never change. some things will never change, right? And I struggle with that one lyric because people like you and me, people like the listeners out there right now listening to this podcast, are fighting tooth and nail so things will change. I love that song because it's a rally cry to get people to convene. I want to add one more Tupac song to this to really amplify the word changes, right? That song, Holler If You Hear Me.
Yeah.
Right? We go to fight this battle around the notion that some things will never change. We just got to continue to scream a little bit louder. Sometimes we have to holler until we get the attention that we need on the right thing. So we start seeing our students for who they are and what they want to be, so we can create the conditions that will enable them to thrive, right? The two songs jump out to me and they both really speak to each other for the right reason. Rally people so that things will change. Rally people so that our voices are no longer not the silent majority, right? But they become the active majority, really starting to advocate for the conditions, the resources, the curriculum that kids need. So as we say at Learner Center, so kids can know who they are, they can thrive in community, and they can be their best selves, and they can engage in the world, right? That's all about learner-centered approaches for kids. That's why I'm part of that learner-centered team. You snatch those two songs together, we think you got a magical, magical, passionate moment to do something special for kids. Holler if you hear me.
Absolutely. And I'm just, Marley, capturing all of this as you were just eloquently aligning education urgency with Tupac Shakur. Okay, so I could tell you a 90s hip hop head because first, you're the only person in the history of VFB to reference Tupac. Okay, so I give you credit for that, Marlon. Right. Second, yes, I love Biggie. I love Biggie. Right, but I just identify with Tupac. Right. Because when you talk about the passion that he brings, right, Marlon, the passion that we bring into the education ecosystem mirrors that passion when you hear Tupac within his lyrics. But the two songs that you identified, one changes, right? When you say some things will never change, immediately when you start talking about rallying people, I go back to John Cotter's work, right? And within the 8-step process that he targets, one of them is the guiding coalition, right? And if we are able to strategically get this guided coalition moving, we're able to make the changes where people say some things will never change, but holla if you hear me. Wait, that's a classic first, okay? That's just a classic. But you are absolutely right with that, Marla, with those two songs, Changes and Holla If You Hear Me, the underpinning passion that we see of Tupac that needs to be mirrored in this work. But the rally call, the guiding coalition that John Cotter talks about within his 8-step process with change management, so eloquently put it. But you highlighted the work, right? Of the Learner Center Collaborative, right? But most recently, you served as the proud superintendent of Middletown City Schools in Ohio. Now, congratulations, right, Marlon, on a successful tenure. And now you are a part of the Learner Center Collaborative as a partner. Now, for my BFE listeners, okay, who does not have any conception of what the Learner Center Collaborative is, what it does, mission, vision, student outcome goals, right? If you can just articulate what is that, right? What is your role within the new record and the new network, and also other national projects you are engaged in, such as partnerships with organizations like District Administration Leadership Institute, DALI?
It's excited to talk about I made a big shift from a superintendent serving thousands of students in the school community and made the choice, right? It was an exciting, passionate choice to join the Learner Center Collaborative team simply for the reasons that they put all kids at the center of every conversation. If you think about the Learner Center Collaborative, our vision is that we want kids to know who they are, to thrive in community, and be able to engage in the world as their best selves. That feels good, doesn't it? That is the heart of the work. We are on a relentless pursuit to generate momentum with educators across the country. We work with over 150 school districts, state departments of education, to focus on defining the whole learner, designing the learning experiences, and creating the conditions that will enable a student to take a journey in their educational career that is inclusive and equitable. That's who we stand for. That's what we do. And we absolutely love working with school districts all over this country. We've got partners in California like Laguna Beach, Santa Ana USD. We've got partners in Indiana, in Logan County, all the way up in Pennsylvania with districts like Shaker Area, Deer Lakes, Hampton, working with a lot of diverse different school communities, putting students at the center of the table to really make sure they can thrive and be their authentic selves. Love being part of that team. Please check us out if you go to the website, just learnercenter.org. Love for you to reach out. Happy to share some more information if you want to connect with me. District administration, right? This is all about serving, right? This is about reaching leaders across the state, really creating affinity groups and chances for learners and leaders from across the country to just convene in a really intimate way. Dr. Connor, I know you had a chance to attend a recent one, but working with superintendent summits that they hold, a phenomenal experience for you to just hone in with some fellow leaders in an affinity group and just amplify the learning around different topics that are on your mind. Last but not least, I'll just showcase one other network that has been near and dear to my heart. I've been a part of the ISTE community for several years now. It's really helped me understand the power of technology when it's used and leveraged appropriately for students to really advance and accelerate in any type of academic educational arena. Currently serve as a proud board member for the ISTE/ASCD organization. We've got a big conference coming up at the end of June. We'll be excited to connect with the ISTE family. But if you want to do some research around AI, ISTE is a great organization to really ping on the website and check out some of the resources that they have around AI. It's all about service, right? We're here to serve. Dr. Connor, you're no different, just in different networks, to be present to help leaders across this country be able to better serve their communities.
Yeah, no, Marlon, thanks for that. And when you talk about the three organizations, and yes, ISTE, very progressive, really advanced on how to be able to scale in an efficacious manner, systems that I like to say mind the gap between humans and machines, right? Obviously, practitioners, leaders, technology. But all three organizations, right? The Learner Center Collaborative, DALI. Yes, Marl, I had a chance to be able to speak at the Superintendent Summit at DALI. Absolutely amazing. Some of the most amazing minds together. And Amy has done a great job with her team there as well. And then ISTE. But this is all progressive education, right? That I'm thinking about when you think about the design, right? Co-creation, where you're creating conditions for students. You know, when I think of students at the center, or yes, they're at the center of the core, I think of how we can create, going back to Tom Vander Ark's episode where he talks about critical problem solving, critical problem finding, and having this lever of imagination discovery within the actual model for students. And that's where these leadership groups are really coming together in a divergent manner to talk about disruptive education, right? I outline it within my book, Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, A Guide to Transforming Schools at AC Stage of Education. But, you know, we got groups out there that are doing that. So Marlon, within any of these groups, right, if my audience want to get involved or to just have this foundational level of inquiry about what each of these organizations bring, how would I or my audience be able to get in touch with a representative from these organizations?
Websites are always a great way to contact any of those organizations. Feel free to share my contact information. You've got my email address there as well. Happy to just make connections to the different networks based on what your interest may be. We'll always take a moment and just listen to what's on your mind and some of the outcomes and aspirations that you have. And if there's an opportunity that I can to connect you to a network that really speaks passionately to what you're trying to do, definitely happy to make myself available. Dr. Khan, if you want to share my information with your listeners, happy to be available for them.
Great. Thank you. And we'll make sure we'll be able to get that information up when your episode goes live, but I want to focus on one of the organizations where you're a board member, right? And this is kind of where we have to now start having this inevitable conversation around minding the gap between this continuum of traditional education models and then now beyond the emergent model. What I'm calling for, or my theory, is that we have to create a digital model in education that has strategic interfaces of technology in it. But you're a board member for ISTE, right? And we know ISTE is one of the national, international leaders with regards to AI in education. But the superintendency role, we know, has become difficult over the past 5 years. But I just want to just focus on these linear threads of innovation to leverage excellence and equity for our instructional systems, right? One of the key, I like to say, balances, right, or parallelization, is that we can use innovation to create sustainable, equitable systems, right? But I know that the AC stage of education, there's this new level of urgency for superintendents, but now from this design standpoint, there's a design challenge, right? Because we have to start moving towards minding that gap between technology and the new demand of AC, the new demand within the AC stage of education, AI. Now, Marla, if I'm a superintendent or executive leader, and I want to hear from one of the czars, one of the board members of ISTE, right? Where do I begin? Because this is a new capability or a capacity that has to be developed, right? But where do I begin, and how do I leverage long-term success with this inevitable transformation that must occur by 2030?
Let's have some fun with this question, if you don't mind, right? Somebody else that I could listen to for 12 straight hours, Jay-Z, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pull a song from Jay-Z. I love his song, Moment of Clarity. I talk about moments of clarity all the time. First of all, be patient with yourself so you find your moment of clarity around how technology, artificial intelligence, how AI, your moment of clarity around how that one thing fits in what you're trying to do for your school community, right? Ignore the distractions of it's intimidating. Ignore the distractions of it might be difficult. I would encourage you to find a moment of clarity and just see it for just a quick second. We're talking leadership right now, without getting distracted about the influence of the technology itself. The question was about leadership. So as a leader, I would encourage you to focus on your moment of clarity, meaning engage your school community, engage your students in some empathy interviews like we have at Learner Center Collaborative. Gain a deep, authentic understanding of the aspirations of your learners and the types of conditions that need to be present in your school community so students can engage in activities in different learning spaces that allow them to thrive in their community, to allow them to be themselves and to contribute to the world, right? That's what's most important. Gather those insights first, and then let that 100% drive your visionary thinking so that you find your moment of clarity around how you need to transform your school environment and your system. That's leadership. Be patient with that process. Really put people at the center of it and listen. You may have to teach along the way. You may have to offer other people their moments of clarity so that they can see and understand what it is you're trying to do and dream up for the students that you serve. But really, really take that Jay-Z song to heart and focus on moments of clarity. Number two, what I'll share also is that word embrace. I'm a firm believer in just embrace it. I was scared as a superintendent with a $95 million construction project. I taught math and I'm a leader. I had no idea how to build a brand new school, right? We have educators out there who had no idea how to use robots in the classroom. Now we've got STEM experiences all over the country for students. This is another topic in education that brings a serious value add to our students. So center your thoughts at the very beginning around the word embrace. Embrace the opportunity to learn yourself up, to gain a deeper understanding about the what ifs.
what if I understood how this could fit into our vision? What if we found some really cool, exciting ways to use this in our classrooms, in our community? It gave kids access to dreams they've never had before, just because the presence of the technology itself is being infused in the right way. Embrace the what if versus the fear and intimidation of what it is going to cause to happen. Great resources out there. Last but not least, I'll close this conversation out with is after you see it, you gain your moment of clarity. Just like any other leadership conversation, the process in which we start to roll out, communicate, calibrate, and onboard our school community is absolutely critical.
Yes.
Have to embrace this notion that communication is necessary and vital to the success that students will have in the classroom with the presence of said technology and this topic here. So really pay attention to that process, right? I was a firm believer, and I hope that anyone who worked with me always believed that this is absolutely true, right? Leadership first.
Yes.
My focus was always on calibrating and elevating the capacity of the leadership team. Sometimes that took months. Sometimes that took us a couple years. But when we got to the point where we reached that desired outcome, where our collective capacity was where we needed it to be, and we were unified in our mindset, body, spirit, and effort, then the rollout really started to happen. This would be a piece of advice I would give anyone around this topic here as they go to figure out how AI fits into their vision for serving kids. Think about that process of rolling out, onboarding, that initial inception point for implementation, and then how you start to scale to go from there. I know we don't have all day, but that initial inception point for implementation after you scale leadership is absolutely critical. A lot to talk about here. Again, I go back to Jay-Z, find that moment of clarity for yourself, and then just rip it from there.
Yeah, no, Marlon, great answer. And to my audience, this is one of those answers, right, that you would have to replay again to be able to unwrap key micro, I like to say micro themes, right, where I like to say that those micro themes bring value add to a macro strategy that you can be able to apply within your teaching and learning organizations. Because one of the micro threads I want to be able to unwrap that Marlon highlighted was first vision, right? You have to understand where you are going. I like to always say reverse engineering, right? That reverse engineering process of looking at what the vision is and then having those specific steps, right? Those activity steps that leads to the vision. But more importantly, right, once you have your vision, there's that moment of clarity, that prognostic, diagnostic lens, leadership, okay? Fundamental. It has to be rooted in all of your practices as you're starting to integrate AI. Marlon, you know, within my or on my social media, every morning I do a leadership tip, right? Because leadership matters. And Marlon, we use this as an asynchronous professional learning tool for my listeners here and also viewers. So the aspect that I need them to go back is to start to unwrap your definition of leadership and how you built leadership. One thing you highlighted, it doesn't take months. It might take years, but to get to that shared mental model around this unification of practices is hard. So that is the core underpinning. Then to get to your agency, your strategies, embracing it, moment of clarity, because you have to be able to calibrate from the leadership level to be able to calibrate within your stakeholders. Unbelievable. Measuring inception points, Marlon. That's why I consider you a czar with that. And we can talk for hours with that. But this is kind of a subsequent question to, because I knew, I kind of inferred that you were going to go deep on the last question. But that's why this question is a subsequent to question three, because I know directionally, right? Education must embark upon this digital transformation process, this re-engineering of the business model. And as you're saying, measuring measuring your process work at various inception points. But for level setting context, Marlon, for my viewers and for my listeners today, traditional change management processes, because you are, again, an expert around change management, traditional change management processes where artificial intelligence and machine learning are integrated into the strategy threads to support the transfer, to support now what I call the new transformation process. So you have your traditional change management processes, and now your new change management processes that underscore digital transformation. This is a new value capture, a new value creation for learning, for co-authoring of learning with students, student agency within the ecosystem. But where do you see this playing a pivotal role, where now we have to be culturally responsive in our classrooms in conjunction with this AI transformation? What does that look like, being culturally responsive in this new digital transformation change management process?
Yeah, well, wow, it's a deep question. Where do we want to start? Like, I want to write for a quick second and then just kind of just let it loose. So here's a couple of things in no particular order. I'll try to make it all make sense. Number one, I've learned something the past 6 years as a superintendent, and it's really changed my perspective on being an educator, right? Take my tag, my title off, my badge off. I'm an educator at heart. And it came from two people, John Malloy, who at the time was superintendent in Canada, is now here in the States, out on the West Coast, and Kim Smith, who's the director at Digital Promises Center for Inclusive Innovation. The learning that I discovered, it completely changed the way that I thought, was this notion of, can we design a solution after we personify a problem of practice for the student who was furthest away from the opportunity? These aren't my words, these are my learnings, and the learning has really pushed my thinking. This notion of culturally responsiveness being in there really pins with this idea of the student who's furthest away from the opportunity. We often, in education, we find a solution, a product, we get a quote through an RFP, we push it through the process, we purchase it, and we put it in play for mass use system-wide, with the hope that it's going to deliver the outcomes that we are looking for. You heard me talk about empathy interviews before. If we focus on students who are furthest from the opportunity, it ensures, after we personify the conditions, the experiences, the barriers that they encounter in and outside of our school system, right? When they go home, when they're in our classrooms and they're in our school communities, we understand those conditions and experiences and barriers. It allows us to really focus on the solutions, right? The design process that leads us to a solution that works for the student furthest from the opportunity. In theory, if we design a solution, a piece of the system that works, or a system-wide experience that works for the student furthest from the opportunity, and then we scale it across the continuum for all their kids, it should be culturally accessible for all kids. As they bounce to our K-12 experience. So I want to start with this notion, what John Malloy and Kim Smith have really inspired me to think about. Yes, we could talk about individually culturally responsive practices that we probably have on our minds of our listeners right now, but I want to focus on design thinking, right? Change management, systems thinking. All of those things that are probably running through your brain right now, I want to focus it on, if we create a problem of practice, we personify that problem of practice. And I mean by Tick-Tick Susan Enfield, right? She says by name, identify the student furthest away from the opportunity by name and go conduct an empathy interview with that student and really allow your findings to push your thinking. That really jumps off to me as you kind of think about the question that you posed, Dr. Connor, because oftentimes we want to shape the experience, right? Because we as adults feel we know what the right educational environment should be. But at Learner Center, right, true to our vision and our mission, right, it's all about the student being able to thrive in the community, being able to engage and contribute to the world as their best selves. In order to do that, my friend Katie Martin has said it time and time again, We've got to get to know our learners, right? How can we ensure culturally responsiveness if we don't know our learners? Get to the source, right? Sit them at the center of the table and let their voice just amplify, right? Turn the song on, holler if you hear me, and give those chance to really drive the conversation. Now, the hard part with that is, you know, as an adult, we've got to let go of owning the solution. Yes. And invite the child to the table, the learner to the table, and have a seat at the table to where their voice really starts to inspire the process that we use to create solutions for them. If we do that, the answer to your question, I would hope that we do have some culturally responsiveness present in that school environment.
Marlon, that was a genius answer, I tell you. And very, very inspiring, right? Because if we reach that level of utopia within the education ecosystem, we will be leveraging equity. We will be leveraging the historically excluded student groups that we've seen. And, you know, you alluded, you talked about the three, I like to say, macro archetypes of transformation, of design thinking, change management, and systems improvement. But obsolete of all those research and theoretical elements amongst design thinking, change management, and systems improvement, it goes back to that first domain of design thinking, empathy, right? How are you supposed to be culturally responsive if you don't know your learners, right? How are you supposed to be culturally responsive if you're not including the voices of the families and of our students and understanding the conditions so the design process is inclusive with the solution? Marlon, amazing. My audience, please, that's another asynchronous answer that you need to be able to rewind and unpack, because again, Marlon, he does it just in a beautiful job where he brings in theory in that practitioner lens. But Marlon, this is a sub question, right? Just because of the depth and the depth and the breadth of your answer, right? And the question is around the persona. And you talked about that in multiple areas within your last answer, but it goes back, can we design for a persona? When I think about that, that is very scary, right? And what I mean by scary is we are still underpinning or incrementally improving various tenets and elements within the industrial model. So if we're still underpinning or optimizing practices that are more of this purveyor of information, this monolithic regurgitation of instruction and responses, and the design for a persona, how do you get a teaching and learning organization, a leadership team ready for this level of, and let's call it what it is, serial disruption in education when you start designing for persona? That's Gen Z and Gen Alpha.
Yeah, but I'll be very vulnerable here if you don't mind. So, and I love my team at Middletown City Schools, some of the best leaders I've ever worked with in my life. And we did amazing things together. We took this standard, right, of putting the kid at the center of it. And we went through a process, and it was emotional. It was frustrating, and it was dirty and difficult. I'll tell you how, right? Before we started any type of work, well, we created our problem practice. We ended that meeting with a task, and the task was for each member of that design team to go back to their buildings, even our central office leaders, assistant superintendent, director of student services, right? All those big titles, right? Every team member had the task of going out into a building, identifying a student who we believed was furthest away from the opportunity. How you chose to do that, questions weren't asked. But the task was to spend time with that student. And it wasn't just 30 minutes. The students had a lot on their mind. So the how is, make it a priority. and not just one student, right? But have the team go out. All of those findings allows you to really understand really the landscape in which you need to consider as you explore a solution. That took us a couple weeks and it slowed our process down significantly, right? But if we want to get to the right solution and not just do whole scale implementation, we had to commit to this notion that we wanted to understand the conditions, experiences, and barriers of our students in and outside of the school. We had a large continuum that we were able to gain some access to. Another task that we've added to the process, at least to my thinking now, and I'm not in that superintendent chair anymore, is I'm really trying to understand the student closest to the opportunity as well. There's a lot of learning when you personify around the student in that circumstance as well. It is my belief, again, I've learned a lot from Kim Smith and John Malloy, it is my belief, even in the empathy interviews we conduct with learner-centered, as we understand our learners, and we learn who they truly are, that sweet spot, right, as Richard Collada says, that space between the problem and solution, that sweet spot, that open space in there, it invites so much more creativity when you truly understand your learners. And that's where we as educators are at our best at all times. All we're simply recommending here is just gain a deeper, authentic insight about the learners and then really go to work in that space between the problem and the solution.
Yeah, no, Marlon, that is a phenomenal answer, the right solutions and really understanding students at the core that leads the design process of really understanding our learners. Unbelievable, Marlon. And this question again, and this was my theory because I knew it would be a nice segue to this question, right? Because now you gave a really good pretext, right, of this next leading question, which is equity. And again, I want to be able to bring in the word equity, right? Because we talked about just momentarily around being culturally responsive. And just we were even talking about explicit strategies or levers of change within systems when we were talking about being culturally responsive is just one, this empathy base of really understanding our students. But now taking it to a deeper level, right? I always say culturally responsive practices and culturally responsive pedagogy are specific threads embedded within this whole notion of equity, where now that tension is between equity and moving towards historically excluded groups, right? So that's a deeper level. So we're at that precipice. But equity has just been, and we're just only going to do it just at that level, it's been targeted as divisive in the education space. And this is where I experienced some dissonance, because my theory is that equity has just been marginalized to race. And that's where people are now becoming divisive with now the exclusion of, you know, curriculum resources and everything that we're seeing, where ultimately the macro theme is race. But let's look at equity specifically in the context of making it good for all through artificial intelligence, right? And in my opinion, as we move to this emergent model of Delta 2030 and then the digital model by 2040, right? The core lever to reach equity now is AI, machine learning, and these emerging technologies. So how would you define equity and innovation from a practitioner's lens, where now both are leveraging each other in this reciprocal manner to improve classroom instruction?
That's simple. The definition remains the same. Whatever a learner needs, provide it. Whenever the learner needs it, provide it. And they should have access to that whenever they need or need to have it present. Simple. An effective educator for every student. An effective leader for every school, an effective leader for every district. The definition does not change. For me, as you really started really having that conversation, it really kind of kind of touched my heart a little bit, right? Because all of the experiences that we've all had around all the nonsense happening throughout the country right now, they're really somewhat of a distraction. But I'll focus on this idea that as we dig through the possibilities, you start to really engage that race to 2030, really thinking about what's most important, and then attaching the word equity to that. What's most important is when our students walk across that stage, they should be able to engage as their best selves in their communities and the world. So what's most important? Learner-centered, we talk about, we like to define the whole learner outcomes. Basically meaning when you graduate, what are you good at? Do you know where your strengths and your weaknesses are? Do you have the knowledge, skills, and dispositions to thrive? Now apply those knowledge, skills, and dispositions to our thinking in the educational profession. Can we or will we eliminate the distractions around whatever the nonsense is about the race conversations right now? And got some strategies I'd love to share at some point that I believe will stomp some of that nonsense out. But really want to focus on this idea that if we really, really put what's most important at the center and then build around what's most important as a school community, talked about guiding coalitions before. If we create those guiding coalitions and really lean into what those whole learner outcomes are all about, the system's thinking really comes into play in that design moment, right? To really think about that merging point. I would encourage us to really focus on how do we rally people so that we have more of a unified front. And hopefully this answer will probably come up in another question coming up here soon, but leveraging the guiding coalition to enable the right loud majority to create those equitable conditions inside the school system. The resources, the content, the platforms, the technology that needs and must be present for those students to have what they need when they need it. That's the fun part of the work. But sometimes we kind of put that out of order. We focus on the stuff before we focus on the what. So for me, it's relatively simple. I don't believe it's a broken formula. I think sometimes we get out of line with our order of operations, so to say, to stick with a math mind. But I really encourage us to really slow the conversation down, engage those guiding coalitions to dream it and think it up, and then really kind of let things kind of start rolling from there. So I hope that answered your question, but that's kind of what's on my mind as you were talking.
Yeah, no, very future-driven, very future-driven in the context of practices. Specifically, I was thinking about, you know, the alignment to the research from my book and the disruptive effect, right? And when you talk about effective leadership and effective educators, where students are now defining their best selves, right? Best equity, those dispositions. I think about now the anchors of innovation science, and those are the leadership principles that need to be undergirded in order to create environments that you just highlighted, right? Because that is a fundamental shift in practice where now we have new outcomes. And when we talk about, or when I talk about culture within my anchors of innovation science, that's one of the pillars, rallying the people, the guide and coalition, that's all around culture before strategy, Marlon. So no, really, 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 really good. And again, I sound like, you know, a broken record, rhetorical information here for my viewers and my audience is that, and listeners, please replay that answer again, right? Because that is another great, great, great example, both from a research contextual form, but as Marlon puts it in such a lucid manner, a practitioner's lens and understanding purpose. But Marlon, last question, brother. Yeah,
another thing in there real quick. It's on my heart right now.
A
unique opportunity for two different sectors that may or may not, depending on your little small world place in this country, either be working together or in isolation. But as I really listen to you right there, an opportunity for us in the education profession to consider. to entertain a mesh point now between K-12 and workforce.
Yes. Yeah.
We truly are talking about whole learner outcomes. If we're talking about the knowledge, skills, and dispositions, an opportunity for industry and K-12 to come together to, for the first time, and there's some great examples across the country, people doing this work at 10 years down the road right now that can influence us now, some great thinkers, but to create those experiences, right? To create the conditions so that as I have discovered my best self, I can authentically be it and the experiences and the conditions that are facing me on a daily basis. So just more of a challenge to our profession right now. Don't open the doors, knock down some walls, and create some environments to where industry in your region and your school community can start sitting at the table and really coming up with some pretty cool things that kids can do. And I'm not talking about field trips. I'm not talking about science fairs on a trifold. I'm talking about some brand new, really exciting ways where kids are going to get jacked up to be engaging in some experiences at school so that they can start to really, really define their whole selves. Just more of a touch. I'm sorry, I had to get that out.
No, I, Marlon, I'm glad that you brought that up because I remember, and this goes back to my days, being a superintendent and looking at critical elements, right? Doing the initial assessment of, you know, the awareness and readiness of my community, looking at various architectural structures that can be disrupted with intentionality, and then the design around integrating traditional education with workforce. And then years later, we created an innovation hub that featured five different STEM verticals that included experiential learning that underpinned a fab lab, a creative garage like we see out in Silicon Valley, where those emulated structures create think tank environments around problem solving, problem finding, activities that have impact within their community. Marlon, yes, that is so critical. Where now that design has to be a part, right? A part of the educational vernacular of our leaders and creating that collective capacity, that mental model that you highlighted. But last question, you made it all the way through, man. I tell you, you get your gold medal. I know, wipe the sweat, right? Get the dust on, get the water out. So last question, Marlon. And take it for what it is, because people run with this question and they go on a rant, or they limit themselves to three words. So Marlon, all I'm just going to say is this: whatever's best for my audience, give them whatever. Okay. But what three words do you want my audience to leave with regarding systematizing generative artificial intelligence and a pragmatic strategy for digital reimagination and the AC stage of education? What three words do you want the VFE audience to leave with today?
You probably think I'm going to go like Tupac, something related to some song or something. You might think I might go back to Jay-Z right now. You don't know where we're going to go right now. So I'm going to throw you a curveball. I'm going to go three words. If the three words get you excited and you want me to talk briefly about what I'm happy to do, but I'm just going to drop three words. Ready? Here we go. Number one, ignite. Number two, reform. Number three, unify. I'll leave it there. You want me to go a little bit more because we got time and you want me to rip it for a quick second, happy to do it. But if you want people to just be curious and let that, you know, speak to their heart and let them feel some type of way because of the words, happy to leave it there. But if you want to play a little bit more, we can. Ignite, reform, unify. We're all educators. You can play with those three words. Let them speak to you however they may.
You are putting the host on the hot seat. So how about this? How about this, Marlon? We find a median where internal interpretation would be for my audience, but you just give them just a little softball pitch like that so that they can be able to hit a home run and then take it for themselves.
Some things will never change. If you know anything about movements in this country or in history, it has always taken people to cause a movement to happen. We must be unified at some point in the stage of our careers if we truly want those experiences to happen for our kids. Ignite, reform, unify. Keep it sweet, short and sweet.
On that note, Marlon, thank you. You made it through VME. Congratulations. I'm going to mail you the gold medal. It's an honor on my VME. Marlon, if any of my audience want to get in touch with you, how would they be able to do that?
I would love to connect with their audience. First of all, thank you for having me again. It's been a joy just following your work. I know I learn from you every single day. We've talked about it in person, face to face.
But just
love everything you're doing right now. You truly are inspiring, and you get my heart beating fast. You give me goosebumps when I follow your body of work. I'm trying to serve and impact and influence in a positive way. Hashtag pay it forward. If you're looking to connect with me, check me out on my website, www.marlonstyles.com. You can find me on all social media channels, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I'm here to serve, here to hopefully say something positive, get you excited about what you're doing. I just want to encourage you educators to just find joy in what you do. Go for your big, oh my gosh, moments. If there's anything I can ever do to really help you engage better with your sense of joy in education, reach out anytime. We'd love to do it.
Absolutely. And Marlon, thank you from the bottom of my heart, because you have supported me when I made that transition from superintendent to where, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy when I said I was going to go on my own. I'm going to start something because I believe in vision that I think that can really move me forward to accomplish my ultimate goal, which is all around change the world. And Marlon, you believed in me from day one. So from the bottom of my heart, brother, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on VFE. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great day.